The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Listen.
Get over here.
When you started playing this game, did you expect?
Wait. This should be within the podcast, right?
Who knows, Mike? I'm just letting it go, and we'll see if it. We'll see when the start point happens.
You're pulling some Swaim style bullshit.
I learned from the master. I learned.
I thought you were really going to host. You're going to Swaim me? Jesus.
That's right. The learner has become the master, my friend.
All right. So go on. I see how bad it feels.
This is the moment when your self-reflection finally catches up to you.
This is structureless. This is nonsense.
Yeah.
So, okay, what was your question?
Were you surprised by how mystical this game was? Like, was that surprising to you? Like, how magical it felt?
That a supernatural element entered into it? I think it's arguable that there is a supernatural element. You think there certainly is?
In the game or in life? That's a much bigger question.
We'll get to it.
Let's take them by scale.
In the game. I guess because the spirit of your father is the wind. But I feel that that's more of a spiritual metaphysical dimension than a supernatural. Or are you using those terms interchangeably?
Kind of interchangeably.
I think that's, if there's, yeah, is there magic is a different question than is there a God or an afterlife?
Or forces, your ancestral forces, right?
Right.
I agree. Those are, and I don't know that this game is that philosophical about it. But I just, you know, I thought when I bought this, I was getting basically a feudal Japan Assassin's Creed, and I was pleasantly surprised to discover it was there's much more emotion in it than I expected. Do you guys understand?
Yeah, it's a good question, Adam. And do you hear how our guest is not sure whether he's supposed to speak or not yet? I wasn't sure if we had started, or what. The answer is you're not supposed to speak yet, by the way. No, go ahead.
Got it.
We gotta name our very special guest.
Absolutely.
Come on, man.
Absolutely.
Well, then you have to say, this is one upsmanship.
Great. I tricked you into hosting it. That was my entire
you
ploy.
You did.
Yeah,
Does this mean I still host Luigi's Mansion as well?
I don't know, but I definitely want the audience to hear this us back and bickering about who hosts Luigi's Mansion. That's the real gold. That's the patron gold right there.
You definitely made me squirm this whole time, so you won this interaction.
Yes.
I roll and expose my belly. Are you pleased?
Yes,
I'm Michael Swaim. This guy straddling me victoriously is Adam Ganser.
Wow.
And our very special guest for this episode is my coworker at IGN and a very good pal, Mr. Zach Ryan. Welcome, Zach.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, Zach Ryan. How you guys
That's
doing?
That's right.
Great.
I was going to call you our king of all things social, but didn't you recently remorph your role yet again?
Yeah, that's true. I was leading the social team for about 10 months, but now I'm director of editorial video at IGN, which means I work very closely with Swaim. We spent a lot of time together this summer on a lot of our event stuff, but typically my job is more focused on like evergreen content and big ticket feature stuff, you know, things like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I invited you on because I know you had a special love of this game.
Yeah.
Most of our interaction now is Slack and Zoom, but you were Slacking and Zooming all kinds of Tsushima stuff. And we had a channel where we were like, Ghost of Tsushima questions so we can sort of build our guides. And you were very active in that. So I was like, this is a Tsushima guy.
Yeah, I am a Tsushima guy. I think as of right now, it's probably my front runner for Game of the Year. Ooh. I really played Goaty. The hell out of this game. Yeah, and first platinum trophy I ever got. I should caveat this by saying that one of my best friends works on this game. Former IGN colleague Andrew Goldfarb is the community manager for Sucker Punch. But I don't feel like that colored my opinion at all. I think I would have loved this game, you know, top to bottom, even if he hadn't worked on it. It's a really phenomenal, game. So.
And because our podcast is supported entirely by listeners like you, we have no sponsors or brands to potentially piss off. So you're pretty safe to speak.
This is when you get to really take on Goldfarb if you want to. This is the moment
for that. You can trash the game. Yeah.
And I do. So
get ready.
Let's get into it. Yeah.
In this corner, Goldfarb. All right, yeah, let's get into it. Let's get into format. Pass our first checkpoint, which in the case of Ghost of Tsushima, I guess I pet another dang fox. I never got tired of petting those foxes.
I pet a lot of those foxes. I pet them.
Did you always take the option to pet the fox, or eventually?
Look, if you're not taking the time to pet a fox, and also I took a photo of every single fox that I pet.
What? That's thorough.
Wow.
I feel like there's some sort of like deep darkness within you if you're not, you know, you're presented with the option to pet a cute fox and you don't do it. Like, what's your deal, man?
Yeah, that's true. I'm suspect of people who don't pet the dog in any game where you can pet a dog.
Yeah.
So our first segment is segueless. We just hard cut right into it. You know what I mean? You feel
not
that?
Unlike the start. Not unlike the start of the show.
Perfect.
Itself.
We just perfect jump connection.
Right feet first. Yeah.
The start of the show is more of a slow fade in of nonsense. This is just smash two bullshit.
Sure.
And this particular bullshit is called our speed run, where we invite slash sort of socially force our guest to try and describe the game as quickly as possible, specifically before Sonic drowns. You won't hear it now, but in post, Sonic will be slowly drowning. hopefully you make it. You know, if you don't, that's fine. We got more Sonics where that came from. But Zach, what are the most important aspects of Ghost of Tsushima in a nutshell to someone who hasn't played it before? Start the clock.
This game is Assassin's Creed meets Breath of the Wild set in feudal Japan. It's a revenge story across three acts, and you can also pet foxes and write haiku.
Wow.
Stop the clock. Wow.
Pretty good.
That was haiku-like. Was
yes,
that
it was.
757? Was that
not
a haiku?
Quite.
Could have been, no?
Also, 757 is not a haiku. It's 575.
Isn't it? 575. Damn. Wow. I need to brush up on haiku, even though I wrote 35 of them to complete this game. Very well sped, which takes us past our next checkpoint. So, similarly to petting a cute fox, we've brutally decapitated a general from the shadows, and it saved our progress. And that takes us to the rants portion. Since I'm the host now, which I didn't anticipate, that makes Adam Ganser player one.
Yeah.
And it's time for his little rant on Ghost of Tsushima, which is, this is, Zach, where we dispense our hot takes, if you will.
Okay.
Top level opinions rather than the facts of what the game's about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Adam, hit us.
Thank you for inviting me to do that. I loved this game, although I didn't think that narratively it was as good as it could have been. And I really do mean just like the story beats were a little clunky. The game of it, meaning the running around in the world, the obtaining of outfits, improving the outfits, every single fox den, every single bamboo strike, every hot spring, every haiku, all that stuff is really fun, and surprisingly, you don't get tired of it. Like it's it has a lot of consistent value. And the story is very good because it gives us old societal structures that sort of allow us to be more objective about the emotional problems of these people. It finds a kind of common humanity in the struggles and moral decisions in its main characters for us, but it gives us that by way of giving social structures that we don't necessarily connect to. Here's what I mean. So Jin Sakai is the ghost of Tsushima, and he's forced essentially to be the ghost because there's a samurai attack to start this game, and meaning the samurai have to defend against the Mongol invasion, and they lose, and most of the samurai are destroyed. And so in order to save Japan, Jin Sakai must become this sort of Assassin's Creed character. Now, that's fascinating because Assassin's Creed has never really bothered with the question of, like, should you be doing this? Never, ever, ever bothers with that question. In fact, they're like, you want to. You know you do. So do this. So this game is a really interesting successor to the Assassin's Creed franchise, in a sense, because it stops and says, like, well, if you were to become this, there would be societies that said, no, you can't do it. This is wrong. And that's the moral tension of this film, this game, is, like, Jin Sakai is forsaking the tradition of his samurai history and legacy, I guess, to become a vigilante defender because he has to. It's very clear he has to. There's really no other way to do it. He tries doing it the samurai way several times. It always fails. And instead, he has to do this sort of backstabbing, sneaking around thing. And, you know, I debate whether I spoil the ending per se, but ultimately, that's the moral conflict. And I find it really fun to see a game that allows us to take one step back from what is now an entrenched genre, because Assassin's Creed is entrenched, even if the franchise has taken some changes in the last couple iterations, and ask, well, what does it mean? Like, what is it? Like, is this morally viable? What does it mean historically? And adds a little more historicity to it. That part is fun, and I really liked it. But the beats of it and the emotional catharsis of it don't always work, and I'll go into some details about it later. Yuna is a good character who's not used correctly, as is her brother Taka, and we should have met more people from the shogunate, and it has a fantastic villain, though. Kotun Khan, fantastic villain. So perfect from the beginning to the end. I think that's a good rant for now.
So are we doing standard Oreo or cream on the bottom?
I like cream on the bottom this time.
All right, yeah. Zach, you're the cream.
Okay, that sounds good.
Thank you for yes-anding that.
Most that people cookie metaphor.
Most people push back when we say they're the cream on the bottom. I don't know why. It rubs people the wrong way. So player two, logging on, ranting at you. I think I'll be the odd man out here, so it's good that I'm the cream. I forget. I lost track of the cookie metaphor. It's good that I'm going second. I really liked the game. I was compulsively playable. I almost platinumed it, but there were a few trophies that I was like, I can imagine what it would feel like to get that one. I'd have to do this 25 more times. I'm going to not. But I'd say I got 90% of the trophies or more, and played nothing but Ghost for, like, it completely captivated me. And yet, I received a message via our Patreon, patreon.com/smallbeans, where you can reach out and we'll always write back eventually, from a big fan of one-upsmanship, who pointed out that what they appreciate most is that we're trying to hold games to the standard that film has risen to, especially in the cases where games are inviting that comparison, meaning cutscenes, like the story is dispensed through essentially film. And this used, you know, notable actors from the world of television and film, so I think it's a fair comparison. And if I hold the story to that standard, it was good. I think it needs an editor. I think the whole game would have been. I did get tired of the activities, although to be fair, I grimly did them anyway until I got as far as I got.
Grimly,
but there was a period where I felt, and this, I want to get into game length in this episode. I don't know if it's a matter of taste or if it's a matter of genre. Like, this was my problem with AC Odyssey as well, which I couldn't even finish. The activity is so fun. They made each activity fun and varied, and there were a lot. But there's such a thing as too much ice cream always. And I kind of resented that to get to the end of the story, I felt that the third act was grindy. I was doing the activities I'd done 1,000 times, and I was just trying to get to it so I could wrap this game up. I thought it should have been about 2/3 as long as it was, and that would have made it stronger. And I know why they don't do that, because a lot of gamers would go, an open world that's 2/3 as long as it could have been, fuck you, where's my other third of the game? But I don't understand, especially as I reach my mid-30s, like, the benefit of just doing it again. If you've done it 25 times and you get it, and that's my rant.
Mm.
That's a good rant. The thing that interests me most about this game, I think, is sort of the dichotomous reception, right? Like, people either think that this game is really stellar and like an exemplary, like a shining example of like a AA game in an era where AA games don't typically really exist anymore. Or people just think that it's sort of mediocre and like a big bucket of fine, which is surprising to me because it really blew me away in terms of its mechanics and the way that it pulls you from one objective to the next. You know, a word that I hear a lot, and it's almost become sort of trite in talking about this game, but it is the best way that I can think to describe it. It's like, it's very meditative, and not just in the fact that you're like writing haiku and taking a steam in a hot spring, but the way that the wind guides you on your horse and pulls you to these objectives, and like one is just out of your path, so you might as well go and do that. And then, oh, there's a one just out of that path, so let's go and do that one too. And then you get back around to the main objective. It kind of pulls you along in the same way that like a Breath of the Wild did for me. And Breath of the Wild is my all-time favorite game at this point, and I think it's interesting now, 3 years on, that we're starting to see games like Ghost of Tsushima, like upcoming games like Genshin Impact, or what was the one that Ubisoft just showed off?
Immortals Fenyx Rising.
Rising, yeah. Right? Like, these are the post-Breath of the Wild era games, and I was really pleased that Ghost of Tsushima was able to nail it in a way that was uniquely its own, but also clearly inspired by that game. I think you're both right in terms of the story. I think that the three-act structure is served the gameplay of it, but not necessarily the overall narrative, in that each of those acts was just the same story, right? It's like, okay, now we got to go to this castle and take him out again. And then, oh, he went to another castle.
The princess is not at this castle.
Right?
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And so, like, it's funny because this podcast being recorded in September, when the game came out in, what, June?
July, I think, yeah.
July, yeah. So I had to do a refresher course on the story because I was like, I don't remember anything that happened in the main story. I remember a lot of the side story stuff. Like, I loved the quest with what was the warrior monk?
The guy in the second area, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I forget his name. And then it ends up
turning away from the monk. Yeah, from
yeah,
that.
Yes. And then Sensei Ishikawa, who I loved.
Yeah,
I loved
great.
His story. The side stories to me were more interesting than the main narrative. But overall, I think that like the thing that really did it for me was just the ability to like tick things off of boxes, which I typically don't do. I also didn't finish Assassin's Creed Odyssey for this exact reason, right? Like, it just becomes so overwhelming. But I found myself weaving these paths back and forth across parts of the island so that by the time I got to the third area, the third act, I had already completed most of the stuff in the first two areas.
Mm-hmm.
So going back through for the platinum didn't take me much longer than an additional like 3 or 4 hours. So I think that's what, you know, what made it so enticing. Also, the combat in this game absolutely fucking rips.
Yeah.
I don't know if that this is, we want to save this for a later segment. Let, you know, stop me if I'm getting too into the weeds on the combat here, but like the combat initially without a lock on, I was really turned off by it. Right. Like, it really felt foreign and weird and just like, why would a modern game in 2020 not include a lock-on button? But as you get deeper into that game and learn the ins and outs, the power curve is so perfectly laid out for you that, like, the end of that game, you're a badass. Like, you really have to sneak around at the beginning, but at the end of it, you're just walking into camps like, I'm here. Who wants to fight? Like, here I am. If you want to take me on, go ahead. I'm going to chop your head off anyway, so let's do it. Like, yeah, that's the end of my rant.
Perfect. Loved that.
Oh, thank you.
Loved it.
And that takes us to Game On, my favorite segment.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Because there's no rules and we just go for it. And I get to interrupt people, which is my favorite.
We all love
part.
Doing that on this show. So yeah. You said something that I thought was very insightful, which was the third act, the three acts.
Adam, if I may.
No, oh, no, my God. The three act structure
coming out swinging.
It serves the game, not the narrative. I agree, because it doesn't actually have a good three act structure in the yeah. movie sense. Right. And the reason why is the end of the first act is recovering your father. Right. Your father, uncle,
your uncle, father,
who great character. Perfect. Like, I think my favorite acting in the game is the uncle father, Shimura, Lord Shimura. He's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But recovering him from captivity should be a huge milestone, and it's kind of not. It's like sort of like a, okay, you did that, now get his castle back, and then have a real fight with the boss. And it's not, it's like, why would that happen? If you have the last samurai in this land captive, why would you let him go this easily a third of the way into the game? So like already the stuff that has emotional power is being dispensed in a way that helps a game, but not helps a story. Same problem with... This is the only time I'm going to bring these characters up because I have a feeling we're not going to talk a lot about them. But Yuna and Taka. Yuna is supposed to really...
Oh, why would we not talk about them? I feel
maybe
like...
Maybe you care a lot about
Taka's... Well, no, I care about the functional structure of the fact that Taka is presented as the sacrifice
Correct.
Character. The character that you actually
yeah.
care
Correct.
Dies.
And that's right. exactly the problem. Yeah. It should have been Yuna. Yuna is
yeah, because you care about
yes.
Yuna because you've transacted with her
exactly.
directly way more. Well, she saved your life.
It also feels unfair because like Yuna really goes out of her way to establish that Taka is like not a fighter and is a very empathetic character and like wants to be in the blacksmith shop and make weapons but doesn't necessarily need to be on the battlefield. And so it like he gets his head unceremoniously just chopped right off. You're like, well, I mean, pick on the little guy. Like, that kind of sucks. You know?
Which
like,
does
I totally
work
see...
to make Coden Khan seem like a bastard. But yeah,
I
think
that.
If
yeah.
exactly. And Yuna had already made it clear that she would rather die saving Taka than the reverse. So it would have been like, well, she died, but at least she achieved. Like, the warriors went to a warrior's death and the peaceable people got to the peaceable area. It just didn't make story math
yeah,
sense.
Or that Taka is finally inspired to take some action instead of being a passive
sure.
character and become like that's really what this story is about in some ways, is a bunch of people who have to take some responsibility for their freedom, their mistakes, their, you know, like, and grow
their choices
or not.
And actions. Yeah.
Grow or not.
Right.
And they robbed us of that with Taka because they gave us the upstart version that makes the game feel like a bully instead of the satisfying one where, like, yeah, somebody had to die for you, Taka. Time to grow up, man.
Well, hey, let me... also, acting-wise, don't sleep on Lady Misako.
Yeah, she was great. Yes. Mm. Yes. Oh, yeah, I loved her so much. The woman whose whole clan was murdered.
Yes.
Brutal. How did you feel about the endings of these little quests? Like, do you like where all these little quests ended emotionally?
Like Zach alluded to, well, I had different opinions about each one in different case, but like Zach alluded to, I found myself more captivated by those side stories that were like a little fable with one point than the mm-hmm. overarching story, which was just take back the island, conquer, win
right.
the
sure.
game.
Right.
And I'm like, well, sure, I was going to do that anyway, you know.
It's particularly frustrating in the third area of this game, which is just less fun. Like, it's less easy to get around, and things are burned down, and it's winter, and the third area is not that great compared to the other two.
I can't believe we've gone this long without talking about, and Zach, I think this is true of Breath of the Wild, and it's probably, mm-hmm. you would back me up on it's part of why it sucks you in and can move you around the map so smoothly, is the... my hat is off to this team if it's Sucker Punch for nothing more than, like, there's so many different... When you get to the third act and you realize that the backgrounds, which are gorgeous, like, rendered with such exquisite love and attention to detail, the environments in this game, when you realize, you're like, well, that's surely everything. We'll see more forest and shit. And you're like, this looks so distinctly different than anything I've mm-hmm. been in so far. The bamboo forests feel different than the deciduous forests, feel different than, like, hilly areas
and
with lakes. It's crazy how varied the ecosystem is. And it,
definitely.
Like, makes the game. It's a big part of what keeps you okay with this is what I'm doing. I'm playing Ghost of Tsushima. It's like, look at the lighting through the bamboo. This is dope.
I mean, I think probably the most inspired decision that they've made in this entire development cycle was mapping the camera mode, the photo mode, to the D-pad, just to allow you to, like, just pop in so quickly to that photo mode, because, like, I took hundreds of photos in the course of playing this game, just because the sun was rising over a hill, and it was like, wow, this is one of the most gorgeous games I've ever played. I better snap a picture of this.
It's,
or like, I was mid swing with the grappling hook or something, and it was like, this looks fucking awesome. I got to take a picture of this. Like,
great filters. And I, the first game I ever used photo mode at all in is Death Stranding. And then it has a very robust one, but I do think this game made some technical improvements, including that you can leave the fucking weather animations and background animations on, like it's a live photo, like a mm-hmm. Harry Potter newspaper or some shit. And I also ended up taking hundreds of photos in this game. Adam, did you use the photo mode? Because it feels like a whole second game, and it adds an equal amount of time. Like, I spent, let's say, 70 hours playing Ghost of Tsushima and 70 hours taking photos. It was nuts.
I don't understand. I know this is going to sound insane because I direct stuff, but, like, I don't, the photo thing doesn't appeal to me in video games.
This is the first game where it really got it.
I tried it a bunch of times because everybody was saying that, and I was like, I better give this a shot. But then I eventually unmapped it from the D-pad and moved on because I didn't. And I guess this is the thing I'm realizing about film in general. I like that things look pretty. I very much care about that.
Controversial statement.
Right. But I don't give a fuck if they're not emotionally mattering. Like, that is, that's it. And the photo mode doesn't do that for me.
No, you're just practicing composition and color theory and shit. Yeah, it's just fun.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, but you're, well, I don't want to neg on this because I know everybody likes it.
I find it satisfying to twitch the stick and be like, that's great. The composition. That looks great.
Great. Yeah, and I guess, like, for a very long time, when games became 3D, I found myself doing that a lot. Like, even with Mario 64, I used to try to manipulate the camera to find fun shots. And now, maybe I've been doing that a long time, but now photo mode is like, well, what am I going to look at these photos? Am I going to go back and look at them and be like, these are cool?
Yeah.
Like, oh, but do you?
I guess that's a good
point.
Yes,
I have, like, several times. But yeah. I see a point where it's 6 months from now, I'll never think about them again for the rest of my life.
Wait,
sure.
But yeah. First of all, it's not fair for me to tell you that what you're doing isn't actually fun. If you're enjoying it, then fucking great. You know, good for you. It's fun. My only point is that the appeal of it doesn't connect for me, and it might be a lack of imagination on my part, but it's mostly because these photos are nothing to me. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, I take them and then they're gone. And like, I'm already appreciating the environment. Does it help you appreciate them more? Do you get that experience from it?
No, as I said, it's a safe.
It's about composition to me. And also, like, I took a lot of, I stopped down in a lot of different, like, moments that I thought, you know, like, oh, when I go back and if I go back and look at these pictures, like, I'll remember what this was, you know, that's legendary quest where you get the lightning slash,
And
you're fighting this dude on this like rock plateau over the ocean and it's raining and there's lightning, you know, crashing down. Like, that was the first time that I was like, oh shit, I should use the photo mode because this is like an awesome moment when I think back to this game, I want to remember, oh yeah, that was one of the like coolest quests that I did. But then I also have like a million pictures of my horse.
I have a great rack focus from Taka's severed head to his headless body.
I guess here's another way to ask this question. Do you do this with life? Like, when you go through life, are you Zach, but also you, Mike, are you guys like taking photos to remember feelings you had?
100%.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah. For
and
sure.
Are you doing that, Mike?
Yeah.
You mean like with my phone?
Yeah.
I don't really take photos.
I don't take a lot either, and I'm trying, like, but we've moved this way. Like, what Zach just said is how a lot of people are doing things, right?
I take photos when I see something funny and I want to tweet it. That's about it.
Right. So photos are an opportunity to say something for you, and therefore don't take stuff. You don't take photos unless you want to say something with it.
And I don't generally whip out my phone and be like, I'm going to take a beautiful, well-composed photo right now.
Right.
It's like, if it is, it's like to snap a picture of where we parked so I remember where we parked or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the reason why is I think the idea of photo mode is a thing that's adapting to a change in culture, a life change in culture, which is that people now process life and their feelings through photography. And they didn't used to because we didn't all carry cameras around, right? Now we do. So the question becomes like, well, what are we actually getting out of that? And are we getting the same thing out of video games? And you've answered it, right? Like, I think, Zach, you're saying you're capturing emotions and later on you'll be able to relive those through those photos on some level, right?
Mm. Yep. And I just like the basic feeling of, it's like playing Tetris, lining up a composition that hits the thirds comfortably and looks nice. And you're like, got it. That looks nice.
And I
just
don't
like that. It's like a mini game in and of itself.
Totally. And I would want to take a photo to say something. And I can't in this game because it's being said for me. Like, they're doing it already, and it's great.
Well, that's why I got bored of the haikus, or I can't tell you how delighted I was the idea that the haikus would be a mini game. But frankly, and this, I guess, is another complaint about just too much ice cream, I didn't need 1,000 headbands that said
especially
random.
When they weren't different. They were just different colors and stuff.
I it's funny. I did all those haiku challenges. Yeah. Like, I did every single haiku in the game. But I think I only wore one headband through the whole fucking game.
Which is kind of crazy because aside from that, the fact that the headbands felt phoned in, like they were just color swaps, this game, every suit of armor was so awesome.
It really was.
I really wanted every cosmetic. And I think that was one of the strongest portions of the game for me. It was like, I look fucking hardcore. When you would get a new mask, like the Sakai armor that's just like a chin strap demon face, you're like, I look so goddamn fly right now. And that makes you want to dip back into photo mode and the cycle starts over. Yeah.
And that I understand. So let me ask you another question. It's related to this. So were you ever satisfied with any of the haikus you composed?
Let me ask a shorter question
suck.
First.
They're all bad poetry.
Here's a question, and I mean this sincerely. Would this game benefit from giving the player the opportunity to write actual haikus?
You mean load a text box?
Yeah.
No one's going to fucking do that.
Nobody's going to spend the time doing that.
I don't know. I'm not sure about that. That's interesting.
I did find early on, I tried to pick the least, essentially my instinct was to pick the least cliche of the three options.
Yeah, or the one that sounded the least like teen angst.
Least bad. And then try to pick the second line that resonated most interestingly with the first line and so on. And
yeah,
actually be like, I made a decent haiku out of the pieces possible. I navigated well. And then eventually I was just like, whatever note is closest to my cursor, I'm that one.
Yeah, that last third of the haikus I did, I was like, what's the least amount of distance I need to move this cursor to compose these haikus, because I'm just trying to tick these off.
Because I'm just trying to get the to-do list done here, which is definitely how I felt for about a quarter of this game. I agree with you on this, except for the bummer is the first like 3-4 times with the haiku, and really a lot of these experiences, they do have a kind of magical spiritual feeling to them that's very rewarding. And then the haikus are so bad that it doesn't continue, even though the environments are fucking awesome. And I'm like, what would it take to make that feeling persist? And maybe it's impossible, but that system of writing what you described as teen angsty, and I think that's exactly right. Like, it's very immature.
Well, they could have Call of Duty won'd it and use real quotes like koans from the Tao Te Ching, or, you know, I'm sorry, that's Chinese, but you know what
right.
I mean.
Yes.
Ancient Japanese
right.
wisdom could have been dispensed.
Yeah, but see, that's also very passive, but I do think that might have been better.
But there is a lot that is very profound and makes you pause and think.
Which is the point of it. That's the point of at least half of these activities, is to like sit back and think, which I loved. I was like, yeah. That's why not? That's a great idea. But yeah, anyway, I'm just trying to like rewrite this to make it better, I guess.
Not unlike the haikus. Right.
Of the hundreds of photos you took, Zach, how many are choice shots of Jin naked in the spa?
Yeah, I think I only took one butt shot of him, actually.
It's like Pokemon Snap, right? You're like, well, I need that good Jin butt shot, definitely.
Yeah,
just
you want to see that butt.
Complete the collection. Yeah.
That's right.
I do want to spoil real quick the epilogue that we've been dancing around, so we can actually talk about the ending. So if you don't want it spoiled, you can skip ahead a few minutes. I will now explicitly state the ending, and then we can reference it from here on, which is that Jin is, using tactics that his uncle father disapproves of the whole time. In fact, the fact that you're a ghost is because you do stealth kills and whatnot. And according to your uncle's code of ethics, you should just show up and say, hey, I'm here, fight me, I'm a samurai, and win. And you weren't in a position to do that. So you played dirty, so to speak. And he actually challenges you to a duel. I believe you spare him, right? You win the duel, but you don't actually kill him, or do you kill
you,
him?
You decide.
I forget.
You can choose.
You decide.
Oh, you get to
you choose. Can
choose. That's why I forget where I landed. I spared him. What'd you guys do?
I killed that dude too.
Because that was honoring to him, it seemed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
You think he wanted...
That's what he asked
like,
for.
Like, if he lost...
Give
he
me a hero's
would,
death. Yeah.
Yeah,
I
but I...
Tough,
but
tough choice,
I
though.
Felt that the end of the arc was... I'm not going to do what my uncle wants me to do, so I did the thing that I thought he wouldn't want me to do.
That was one of the more successful beats, right? Like the option that they give you to choose, you know, it's like, well, is this my last act of honoring, this like time honored tradition, right? Like, is this Jin Sakai's last acknowledgement of his old ways, or does he walk away because he's like, that's not how I do things anymore. You know, I'm this person now and I'm going to spare your life despite the fact that you're asking for this hero's death. Like that to me, I sat there on that. I think that there's a timer, if I remember correctly, that like counts down and, to make that decision. And I feel like I waited until the very last second to actually decide what I was going to do.
Hmm.
Maybe there's not a timer. I actually don't remember.
I also remember early in the game wondering, as soon as I realized that would be what the main arc, the emotional core of it is, didn't you guys find yourself wondering, if I always approach every encounter by hitting up on the D-pad and saying, I am here, fight me, do I get a bonus ending where my uncle, like, right. I found myself wanting to please my, I'm like, can Lord Shimura be cool with me? Is there any way for this to work out? And I'm pretty sure you're doomed.
Yeah.
You're destined to clash.
I don't think it changes. Yeah.
I kind of wish that the game had introduced the poison earlier because number one, I don't use poison that often. Even in an Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, I barely used that.
Well,
at all.
It ended up being the barrier that really is the. It was unforgivable that he used
it's
poison.
It's also the most tangible, and it actually does sting. When I learned that, I'm like, yeah, that does sting that I unleashed a poison and they're using it against us. That sucks.
Yeah.
That's my bad. That felt like a mistake.
And that would have helped. Again, that should have been part of the first act. Because
agreed.
It becomes the most important transgression. Because otherwise it's like, did you feel any connection to, like, this is not the samurai way, what I'm doing? Like, did you feel any connection to that as a problem?
Not really. No. I think I was just basically just making choices dependent on how I wanted to play the game.
Right. You yes. know? Game
yeah. Do I, there? Okay, there's 30 dudes here. I'll probably sneak around for a while and then kill guys. Or there's only 5 guys here, so I'll just take them all on at once.
Totally agree. But I admired the game for trying to make that a story point.
Trying to actually make you care about whether you are going stealth or going in guns blazing, which is usually a decision made out of convenience. And it arguably remains so, but that is a valiant effort to be like, I wonder if we can make them feel bad about going stealth.
Or
it's an interesting experiment.
Right.
But
because,
no, I didn't feel bad at all going stealth. Well, I'm like, I have to. There's one of me. There's friggin' 30 guys. Come on.
Assassin's Creed, again, I basically said this in my rant, but Assassin's Creed, the whole idea of it was like doing this completely ridiculous ahistorical approach to combat, and it's become such a permanent thing that you don't ask whether or not it was a thing people could do or should do in their time period. I love that this game was like, no, that wouldn't fly in medieval or like samurai
in
Japan.
Feudal Japan. Yeah.
That wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. I loved that idea. I just didn't. I don't know, man.
When we hear
hard
about that in the American Revolution, too, or whether it's legendary or apocryphal or whatnot, I was taught, it's almost certainly false, but I was taught that, like, the Americans won because the British all marched in straight lines and were like, it is honorable to wear red and stand together and hold your guns and then fire and see who wins.
Right, this
and
is how
Americans
wars are
were
done.
Like, fuck that. I'm hiding behind rocks. I'm Gears of War in this shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to kill dudes. I don't know what you're trying to do.
And so I guess it is hard. It's hard for me to identify with the uncle at all. I'm like, what was Jin supposed to do, man? He saved your ass.
I get it.
Well, I know medieval ways of thinking are markedly different than ours. So it's just a case of historicity, I guess.
Well, I think there are ways, again, I think a more effective storytelling engine would have made exactly the same points, but more effectively. Like, there were some stories, all the stories were based around the idea of this sort of antiquated culture that has long left, and we're sort of re-entering it with a little bit of a 2020 mindset, but then also being asked, now set that aside and think about what it would have been like for them. You know, and I love that. I'm like, I think that's really helpful and fun. But they didn't always stick the landing on all of them. You know what I mean? Like, you mentioned the Buddhist monk one. That's
Norio.
Yes, Norio.
That's his name.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it until the end when he went like completely berserk and I
just slaughtered everyone.
Yeah, I just had a hard time with that. I was like, no, that's
that did seem out of character.
Yeah,
for sure.
And also that seemed like a modern storyteller's way of resolving things, right?
Or ending,
like,
with a climactic mission, because they also wanted the gameplay of, well, you got to introduce 50 baddies because it's the final mission in this quest chain. I guess Norio kills 50 guys. How can I write that in a way where that works? And it's like, actually, the end of Norio's quest chain should have been a non-combat mission or something. You know? What if it ended with the ultimate haiku? Or somehow a special haiku that you do with Norio and his quest changes sort of ends sweetly and quietly. I would have been fine with that.
Yeah, I think what you're describing is just like expectation, right? Like the expectation that like, okay, I've invested 5+ hours in this one particular storyline. I need it to end on some sort of climactic something. And the mission before that final mission, when you discover that his brother is still alive, to me, that was like the climax of that story. And so, yeah, it did seem pretty weird that the last mission was like, all right, now we're going to kill a bunch of these dudes. It's like, well, okay, I guess that's fine. Mm-hmm. But then you have other missions like, or other storylines like Ishikawa's storyline that ended with him letting his protege go, you know, and I thought that was really cool. So I don't know. I wonder if it's you just kind of have to pick and choose, right? Like you have to meet some sort of action quota. And so this person gets an explosive ending and this person gets sort of a more relaxed or not necessarily relaxed, but downplayed ending.
I agree with you that there have to be emotional variations for us to feel satisfied. Like, totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. It's the war is hell ending, which is basically what Norio's character gets, is a tough sell because that seems like hard for that culture to embrace. Like, nobody really seems to embrace that idea, even though it's totally reasonable for them to.
That ending would have made sense for Ishikawa, right?
Yes.
Like, you go, I forget his protege's name, but like, if that had ended closer to the way that Norio's story ended, where you storm her base with all of the Mongol horde behind her as like the company that she's been training in archery and stuff, and you have to take them out, like that would have made sense. And that does happen to an extent. And then Norio would have gotten a more like chilled out ending. That would have made sense too. But yeah, they just, you know, they seemed maybe a little swapped around.
I wanted to talk briefly about Yoriko. The Sakai clan's elderly caretaker.
Who actually is the one who teaches you to mix poisons.
Yes.
To make the poison, yeah.
Her, she was, I think, my favorite of the side quests. Although...
Oh, really?
Yes.
I found myself the least invested
totally.
In her. She's just here to teach you how to make poison.
You said it, man, because...
I mean, I thought that until that very last
correct.
Mission with
yeah,
her.
That's it. That's exactly it.
And that moment is probably the sweetest moment of the whole game, you know, like that those dialogue options and stuff that pop up there, like that was a really, really cool moment. And because I didn't use poison after I did the first maybe one or two missions for her, I was like, I don't think I'm even going to do this quest line. Like, I don't really care enough to see it through to the end. But then I thought, well, as long as I'm doing everything else, I might as well finish this one off too. And I was really glad that I did, because that was one of the more rewarding quest lines, I felt like.
I agree.
Can someone refresh me on the moment? Already forgotten.
We
it.
Find out that, okay, so first of all, most of her quest is like you're going to through your family's graves.
Right.
Right? Which that alone is, it's not engaging, as Mike said. I think that's an accurate description, but it is interesting. Because, like, you know, hey, this is the culture, and he has to do these like, sort of cultural things. And then you're hearing stories from her, and she's fawning over you, and you're, you know, you're dealing with that. And also, you're kind of remembering your lost family, and, you know, so some of that. But it goes on and on and on. And you meet some of the Ronin that you have to kill. And then there's a third, like, the very last part of it, maybe even the fourth episode, is she's kind of tired, and you realize, oh, she's not doing well, and you take her to the last grave, which is, I believe, like her, one of her relatives' graves, right? It's not your grave. It's her relatives' graves. And you find out that she slept with your father, right? Isn't that what it is?
They had a whole relationship. Yeah.
Right. It's not like they had a whole intimate relationship. She kept it secret all these years. It was a sort of... a source of happiness for her, and
I may be wrong about this, but I don't think it's ever really explicitly stated that they had a relationship. It's just the context clues in the conversations, because eventually she confuses Jin for Jin's father, and she starts saying things to Jin that he's like, oh shit, like they clearly had a different relationship than I
understood.
And
then did you guys spare her or kill her?
Ran her through. That's what she asked
for. I kicked her right off that cliff. Yeah. You know, I used my samurai kick and booted her right off the cliff.
Flaming arrow right in the skull. That's what she asked for.
Yeah, that's what she wanted. That is a good moment.
Feels like I think I may have missed the context clues on that and not latched into that or not been paying close enough attention at that moment.
See,
that's cool. You made me realize I really love the Straw Hat Ronin subplot as well.
I wanted to like that more than I did. They got rid of the guy who you care about too early.
I just pretended they were the same guy.
Right.
And it was all coming to a head for that guy.
But he was another cool character. a really cool character, right? Like, he's like, I'm the same as you, but I wasn't born in a noble family, so I'm here. You know, like, that's a great trope. It's sort of a superhero trope, really. Right? Where it's like, a thing you see all the time. The nemesis of the superhero is the one without the gifts who have to make it themselves. And so they become bad guys.
MODOKs,
you know? Yeah.
Et cetera.
Happens a lot. So there were some great side quests, and I do think the main quest on a spreadsheet works and it's good. It's just, you know, it's hard because it's an open world game, and so you play 20 hours of bamboo strikes and murdering Mongols out in the countryside before you pick up the next step of the quest, and you've forgotten everything that you've done before.
Yeah, and that's my issue with any of these open world games. Like, I always find myself distracted by, you know, X hours of side quests, and then go back to the main quest and be like, what's happening here? Oh yeah, this guy did that. Okay, now I sort of remember. And I think to myself more often than not when I finish games like that, I'm like, I should play this again and just storm the main quest line and just play through the main quest line and just to really take this story in. But I'll probably never do it because, like, you know, that's still 25 hours that I had to to invest, you know, to get all the way.
It further reinforces how good Breath of the Wild is, because Breath of the Wild found a way to give you an alinear structure where you really had true freedom. And yet I don't know if it's design or if it's gamer mentality or whatever, but basically once you kind of get into an area, you kind of finish their narrative there. And like sort of see that area through.
Well,
and so you're tracking it.
In Breath of the Wild. Yeah, and Breath of the Wild also allows the player to choose how invested they want to be in the story, right? Like, there are cutscenes that you're served for sure that you watch as part of the standard playthrough, but there's so much more of that story that is hidden memories and just like environmental storytelling there I think that's one of the things that always kind of surprises me about Breath of the Wild is people are like, oh, there's no story in that game. Like, that's one of the big detractors. It's like, it doesn't have a story. It's like, well, first of all, none of the Zelda games really have that great a story. But secondly, this Breath of the Wild probably has the best out of all of them.
Almost certainly.
It's probably the most developed.
Almost certainly. It's just that, it's really more, that's a more experience-driven game. I would argue this game's pretty close to an experience-driven game, even though they give you a plot.
Oh, totally.
Can we talk about the combat?
Hell yeah.
The combat is my favorite of Batman's combats, right? Like, that's what it is. It's Batman's combat to me.
I feel that it's distinct enough to be differentiated. Batman's combat really feels like a rhythm game converted into combat. And this feels like a complicated game of rock, paper, scissors, which is also, it reminded me of playing Soul Calibur back in the day, honestly, because Soul Calibur has the system where a vertical strike beats a horizontal strike, but a kick beats a horizontal strike, but a vertical strike beats a kick. You know what I mean? It makes a loop. And constantly switching stances or forms in Ghost of Tsushima felt super great and satisfying, and I think I like the combat in this better than any Assassin's Creed game.
Definitely.
And that's...
Yeah, me too.
That's a big feather in the cap of Sucker Punch, for sure. Because I'll be honest, I'm not, like, that big a fan of Infamous, but it is novel. The thing, at least they did the thing with the concrete and neon. They are interesting. It's interesting how Sucker Punch continually is not shy about being inspired and iterative. Like, they take their lead from other great games. They're not so novel that you don't recognize what you're playing. But, man, they do try shit. I really give them a lot of credit for they try a lot. To me, innovation is super, super important. I think it's the only way to combat the grind. I just can't. Unfortunately, gaming is a disposable medium, much like comedy. Like, I can't play the same game forever. I have to have a new kind of game to stimulate my neuro pathways in a different way. And Sucker Punch is an incremental step toward that. Zach, at the top, you identified it as a AA game. Can I ask what makes it not a AAA game? Because it feels AAA quality.
I just think that looking at Sucker Punch, the size of their studio versus something like sorry, I got a motorcycle going by here.
Don't be sorry. It makes you cooler.
And it gives you some flavor. It adds some flavor. I love it.
I'm also smoking two cigarettes.
Oh, yeah.
It is a first party Sony studio, but it's not the size of Naughty Dog, right?
Sure.
I think that just general resourcing is the way that or at least a cause of a lot of the detractions that I saw for this game. Like a lot of people are like, well, the facial animations are bad, or the textures up close are gross, or you know, a lot of the animations are kind of cut and repeated throughout. And I think that's really the difference between something like The Last of Us Part Two, where every single animation is bespoke depending on what you're doing in what environment.
Changes, and, yeah, relative yeah, to your anxiety level. It's nuts.
Because you have 500, 600 people on staff versus Sucker Punch, which I think is like 250. I could be getting these numbers wrong. But I know that Sucker Punch is significantly smaller, and
yeah.
You know, that in that you've got to kind of cut back on those sorts of things. And so that's why you see when two characters are riding up to a mission objective on horseback and they arrive, they both get off their horse in the exact same way at the exact same time, right? Like, there's only one horse dismounting animation, and it's that one, right?
Sure.
And so, like, that to me is the difference between AAA and AA here. Not that it's an independent developer, but just like the actual size and resource of those games.
I do think to a casual player, it feels very up to par with.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I'm actually surprised to learn that, not being as familiar as you guys are with development size and budgets. I don't know that stuff as well as you guys do. It did not feel that way to me. Felt just the same. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as good as Last of Us, in my opinion, but it felt just as robust.
Well, Zach, you said you'd give a game of the year. Is that over Last of Us Part Two?
Yeah, wow. I think so. I think it's funny because, like, my criticism with Last of Us Part Two is that it's just too long. I think that game needed an editor, and I also acknowledge that this game needed an editor. But like the stark contrast of these two games to me. So I got this game early. I got Ghost of Tsushima early and was able to play it entirely before it came out. Like, so by the time the game launched, I had already finished it. But Last of Us Part Two, I didn't get an early copy. And so I played that game on release, which meant that I played these games basically back to back. Like, I finished The Last of Us and I started Ghost of Tsushima in the same week. And so, like, starting Ghost of Tsushima, it was like, oh, this is a capital V, capital G video game. Like, this is a video game-ass video game. Whereas The Last of Us Part Two feels like a very definitive, like a very distinct experience. And I love The Last of Us Part Two as well. Like, I thought it was incredible. And there are moments in that game that, like, really, really affected me very hard. But just, like, the moment-to-moment gameplay, I had more fun with Ghost of Tsushima. Mm. Like, I had way more fun. I felt more compelled to see everything that Ghost had to offer. When I think about, like, which game would I rather replay first? Probably Ghost. So I think that I just enjoyed the actual playing of it more.
Nice.
That's interesting. Tells me how much I do want emotional coherence in the game. So Mike and I have an ongoing debate on this podcast. Like, I've been sort of framed as the guy who likes gameplay more than story content, and Mike is the opposite. And yet I feel pretty strongly that Last of Us 2 is an order of magnitude better than Ghost of Tsushima. Although I can't deny any of the things you said about what makes it good. I just liked the emotions much more in Last of Us 2. So I'm learning where I fit on this spectrum a little bit more.
That's the interesting thing about this is my choice for Game of the Year, because I also acknowledge that Last of Us Part 2 is a better game.
Oh, interesting. Like, okay.
I think it's a better story, and I think that it does gameplay things that are more more interesting, more challenging, more original. The arcadey sort of feel to aspects of Ghost of Tsushima and the ability to kind of turn my brain off and wander to these different objectives just resonated more with me by the end of, you know, by the time I rolled credits.
Yeah. Yeah, there are some very confident video gamey conventions to this game too, like the wind is narratively very silly, but also it's great. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, man, I'm into it.
Right.
Like
it's new, it's innovative. Yeah.
Right, and the fact that they're like the fact that this place would be a hellscape for a person with allergies is like a thing that I still liked about it for a video game. You know, like leaves everywhere and dirt everywhere, but it's like, oh, it's blowing so poetically. I mean, it's kind of a ballsy thing in a video game, right? Like, and I like that about it.
Just to throw particle graphics friggin' everywhere.
And just like, hey, man, this place is so beautiful. Like, it's way more beautiful than you fucking think it is.
It looks
way
like the movie
more.
Hero. Yeah,
exactly. It's like, it's movie Japan. Yeah. And I was all in for that. It does tell us we should expect less of it in terms of narrative coherence, I guess. So maybe we're not being as fair to it as we should be.
I do want to correct. I did misspeak earlier. Naughty Dog is only about 100 people bigger than
Sucker Punch. Oh, interesting.
But that's still a pretty significant difference.
Yeah, 100 folks is 100 folks, though. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Okay, interesting. I guess my only... I wanted to make one more comment about... So you guys said that you thought this was a step forward. Is that right? Do you think this
I think it's a half step forward.
I'll agree with that.
That's what I mean. That is interesting about Sucker Punch is they don't invent a new genre, but they move the genre forward. Whatever genre they tackle, they seem to move it forward in multiple dimensions. Like you said, it's their own flavor of combat that is notably different than other forms of combat, at least to some degree. And it's their own flavor of traversal with the wind. We haven't seen that before. Their photo mode is a new, robust, implemented. It's like they implement things in different ways and elevate things, but they don't bust in through the skylight with a brand new genre.
Yeah.
You know?
This felt very much like the Thomas Edison of games to me, in that it felt like a fusion of a lot of other people's ideas. Yeah, murdered my elephant immediately. It felt like a fusion of a lot of other things that I was aware of. I feel like if you've played a lot of AAA games, this game's going to feel like, oh, yeah. It's like a little bit of Batman, a little bit of Assassin's Creed, you know?
Yeah, I often described it when I was talking about it, you know, when this game first came out, as like the best one of that game.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. But that's also great because all those other franchises have bailed on making this game. And I think this game tells it, like this being Ghost of Tsushima is like, no, there's still plenty of life left in this game. You just need to care about it, you know?
It is definitely like a weird, it feels like it came out of like 2015,
yeah, definitely.
Right? Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also it tells us they're not dead yet. You know what I mean? Like we don't need it to be an RPG to be interested in it. It can be what it is, just a really good version of it. It's like, great. I'm okay with that, you know?
Half-Life Alyx is getting lauded tremendously, and I feel it has the same thing. It is not... Every aspect of Half-Life Alyx has been done in another VR title that's more experimental, but it's a bundle of VR concepts that's sort of a survey of, here's the most AAA VR experience that represents everything VR we can do so far. It's like a state of the industry disguised as a game in a way. And I feel like Ghost of Tsushima is almost that. It's like... this genre has been around for so long now that here's a game that is sort of a Criterion Collection remaster of all the concepts that we love about this genre bundled into a new game.
Yeah, in a place that in a place that deserved to be explored too.
Absolutely. Although Sucker Punch is not a Japanese developer, are they?
I don't know.
I wonder if it would have been different if it were developed in Japan, is all.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I can tell you that when I was playing this, I was also listening to the Wrath of the Khans podcast by Dan Carlin. You know,
sure.
You know the hardcore.
Okay.
So, and I'd listened to it before, but I was like, dude, I'm going to get full Mongol right now. And I did. And it was like, I was very impressed with the amount of effort the game put into rendering the history accurately, as magical as the world is. Like, just little things like they drink fermented horse milk. That's true of the Mongols. They drank fermented horse milk. Just little things like that that are like, they cared, you know? And I like that. Yeah. I respect that. I think that we need to see more of that if you're going to do history as a template for your video game. I'm into it.
Oh, they also did Sly Cooper. I didn't know that. I just knew Infamous and this. Yeah. Sly Cooper ain't too shabby.
No.
But yes, they are underrated series, an American development team.
It would be interesting to see a Japanese team do it.
I just think it's interesting that it's
It is worth noting that this game also sold super well in Japan.
Oh, yeah, and I saw a quote from some bigwig Japanese developer who's like, I'm embarrassed that we didn't get to this first. We should have done this.
Yeah, I guess
someone major.
I feel like it was like Kamiya or something like that. I forget who said it, but it was, somebody above along those
I'm
lines.
I'm just always interested in like, because like, Red Dead 2, like Americans presenting what they think a distillation of the Wild West is as far as the tropes go in that genre, that's going to be totally different than like an Italian team presenting. It's going to have more of a spaghetti Western vibe or what have you. I'm always interested in tropes and how they're being filtered through whatever culture is actually presenting the thing. You know what I mean?
I think
it was the director of Yakuza.
I see the connection there.
Negoshi. Sure. Okay. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. Do you think that because we're living in a quarantine in 2020, that does that affect the reading on this game in any way to you guys? Because I think it's interesting for this to come out.
I think maybe it affected the way that I decided to do everything in an open world game for the first time ever.
Yeah.
Like, 2020 was one of my resolutions in January was like, this is going to be the year that I play fewer games and just like really pick the stuff that I'm very, very interested in and make more time for reading and records and shit like that. It turns out none of that shit happened, and I just played just an obscene amount of games.
This is the year of kissing strangers. 2020. Sign me up for it.
Right. This is going to be my year. Yeah.
I mention it because it's the second game of the summer, basically, and they're the big games of the summer. And they're both apocalypse games. Last of Us is also an apocalypse game, and then this game is an apocalypse game.
Well, it's like your culture is irrevocably gone. By the for sure.
Right. It's a weird kind of end of an era game.
And I think like it's fun to see games sort of land in that moment where we're open to thinking about these things and maybe we wouldn't have been.
But there's always been I was going to shout out the original Fallout 1 for having a similar storyline. Fallout 1 ends with you returning to your tiny community after having gone out and conquered the irradiated wastelands by hook or by crook, and you come back and your tiny community is now terrified of what you've become because you've been affected by your journey. They exile you. They're like, give us the thing that we sent you out for, the quest item, but then get the fuck out of here.
Gone.
We're terrified of you.
That's a great comparison. I hadn't even considered that.
Yeah, and I just... I think apocalypse has gone hand-in-hand with video games for a long time, so I hesitate to say that, like, Sucker Punch started making this because they're depressed about climate change.
I don't think so. It's more... I'm more asking, is our lens impacted by COVID and the quarantine?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm asking.
We're accepting art through the lens of... being kind of bummed out right now. I don't know anyone who's not kind of bummed out right now. And I'm perceiving all art through that lens
And this game was so beautiful and I'm so in my apartment. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I'm running on a horseback on hillsides with wind. And it's like, even though there's people getting burned alive and stuff off in the corners, it's fine, man. I'm really, you know what I mean? I just think it hit at the right time to fully be appreciated.
Yeah, there was a lot of that, like, oh yeah, outside is nice.
Yeah, simulated.
I'll look forward to experiencing this.
I've heard about the outside. Oh yeah.
I am really extra excited or digging any, like, I just started Skyrim VR and it's amazing because any outside simulator I'm eating up right now. Like, yeah, just show me how pretty it is outside.
Yeah, that's interesting. Should we pass the final checkpoint, Mike?
I think so. Although it couldn't have been that interesting if there is nothing to say, but let's end the show. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not?
That was so interesting. Let's stop talking about it.
Well, we still have to do keep or delete, where you can put your last points in if you'd like.
Oh, I forgot. That's right.
Yeah. We still have to do keep or delete. So this is the final segment where we decide whether this video game belongs on the celestial hard drive that we shoot out to the aliens
really
or whatever.
Cleanly define.
We usually say something between 1 to 200 games that an alien would pick up and think, this is a great medium. Do we keep it or do we delete it? That kind of thing.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
So, okay. Usually we ask the guest to weigh in first on that, but Mike, why don't you go first this time?
Really? I really think Zach should go first just because that way his interpretation of what the celestial hard drive is not spoiled by any of our preconceived notions. Yeah.
Unsullied. Yeah. Okay, great.
Okay. I can dig that. I say keep. Ooh. If it was in a list of 200, right on this hard drive, it would be like 199.
Okay.
You know, like it would be on the lower end of the keep spectrum. But I think, as we discussed earlier, because it is the best one of those games and it does this 2015 open world in a way that is like so perfected to a T, I think this over like an Assassin's Creed Syndicate or like a Batman Arkham or not Origins, but the first one, Asylum or something like that, right? Like it's, I say keep.
Is there any Batman game you would keep over this? Any of those Batman Arkham games you'd keep over this or no?
Well, it's
Arkham City.
Okay,
oh,
so the
really?
Second one.
You like City better than Asylum?
Oh, I do like City better than Asylum.
That's a rare take.
I love Asylum, but City is, it takes everything that Asylum does and I think does it better. And also awesome boss fights.
Yes, true. I remember that. Yeah, it's been a while. I need to play that game again. All right, Mike, do you want to go next or would you prefer I do it?
No, I can go because it's exactly, it's like Zach and I are two video game characters dismounting our horses because same for the same reasons. I thought I was going to delete it, but I actually will keep it because for better or worse, this genre is a hugely impactful genre. The third person adventure where you're either going to do combat or stealth, you know, that kind of game, and you're going to unlock checkpoints and expand the map is so important. And I actually think things like Horizon Zero Dawn or Marvel's Spider-Man or Arkham are kind of differentiable from this, but I think this is absolutely the best one of these types of games. And so I would keep this, and I probably would also keep one of the Arkhams. I think there's room for both.
Totally.
Yeah. One day we'll have to actually make a list and be like, oh, no, there isn't. Or there is. I don't know.
Sure.
When
listenership dwindles to zero, we will actually reveal what's the best video game. But ironically, no one will hear it or know.
Right. Yeah. Right, into the void, just like the universe is destined to become. Yes, I'm definitely deleting this game. Not because I didn't like it. I did, and I think everything you guys said was correct. I don't think it's as distinct from Assassin's Creed or Batman as you guys do. I think that I still prefer Assassin's Creed 2 for a lot of reasons. Although, you know, yeah, a lot of reasons. And also, I prefer Arkham City to this game. So, and I've already kept Assassin's Creed 2. So I'm going to keep it, I'm going to delete it, but I hope that they make more. I hope they continue this franchise. I think there should be a franchise of this. I don't think this is the end of the story. There should be more.
It's funny that you mentioned Assassin's Creed 2 because, like, to me, this game, I felt very similarly about this game that I did to the original Assassin's Creed in that, like, this is a good game, but man, the sequel is going to kick ass. Like, the sequel's going to be so good.
Oh, I feel that way about Horizon also. So I want to pit those two sequels against each other. That will be exciting.
Yeah.
I think that was when we did the episode on Horizon, we were like, the sequel's the one that we're going to get excited about.
Right.
Yeah. I feel that way even about this game. Like, I think there's every reason for Sucker Punch to put a lot more money into Ghost 2.
And I think that they will, because this game really, really sold well.
Shit. Yeah. Is it too late to delete it? I delete it.
No, you're changing. You're changing your stripes.
I'm changing
on this?
If it's allowed. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, it's our show. We can decide.
I believe
we
everything
want.
I said, but Adam added a thing that trumps all that, which is that the next one will be better, and I'm pretty confident in that. So yeah, I'll wait. I'll wait to tag my keep.
Yeah, I gotta say. But
it's a vote of confidence in Sucker Punch. I think this is their best IP so far. I think they have found an IP they need to stick with for a while. For sure.
I enjoyed Second Son a lot. It sounds like you didn't.
Infamous games are decent, and Ghost of Tsushima is great, and great's better than decent.
For sure. Totally. I will say that just thinking about the summer as a whole, like, it's been so much joy to play Tony Hawk again after these very serious dramas.
You're really good
and
at
stuff.
It. You're very good.
I think it's just because it's like, thank you, but it... also, why am I thanking you? Who cares? That's not going to improve my life to be good at Tony Hawk. But, like, it's nice to...
Well, in case chicks are listening, I'm helping you out.
If you want to see a dark
slide...
It says
here on your resume that you're very good at Tony Hawk.
Is that... Would you like to take me out to coffee and show me that dark slide? What do you think? String together a combo for me? No, so it's just fun to play a game that's like very arcadey and meaningless after these, like this game and Last of Us 2 are so heavy, I would say. So that's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. A fun way to wrap up the summer, even if the quarantine will never end, you know?
Jeez.
Yeah. I know, dark. I'm sorry, Mike. This is why you have to host all the episodes, including Luigi's Mansion. You have to host it.
But Luigi's Mansion is so dark and grim, it's just going to bring out the worst. It's about friggin'
very
ghosts,
spooky. Very
dude. They're
game.
Dead, bro. Right.
That dog ghost really makes you think a lot about the afterlife, by the way. Don't want to get too
sewer
far
level
ahead.
Yeah. There's sludge involved?
There is sludge, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lot to look forward to on one-upsmanship.
That's right. speaking of one-upsmanship, that's one of them just ended. Hey, gotcha. Zach, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find you?
Thank you for having me.
What is your, what's your most active social platform? That's what I'm trying to say.
Twitter. I'm most active on Twitter, where you can follow me there at ZacharyISD. I'm also on a bunch of IGN stuff, but most often on Nintendo Voice Chat, NVC. It's IGN's Nintendo show, Thursdays at 3 p.m.
That's right. How come the D, by the way? Because you're Zachariah R, really, right?
Well, my middle name is Daniel.
Oh, there you go.
Red. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Learn something new every day. So
there you go.
You're Zachary Daniel Ryan. That's a bit of an assassin name. Have you been told that before?
I have been told that it is a very evil set of names.
Zachary
Daniel.
Yeah,
it's got
Daniel
a very
Ryan.
Foreboding. Yeah. It's got a very foreboding sound. But when I was a freelancer, my production company was called Three First Names Production, which I thought was very clever.
That is good. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. Dude, thank you so much for being on. We loved having you.
Thank you for having me. This absolutely. Was a blast.
Thank you for listening. And you can find us, as always, at patreon.com/smallbeans. That's all for this time.
Work complete.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids. No plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.